someone to consider.
I guess that would be her and your team, and then the governor on a replacement. I think Dave and Joey would have, or excuse me, Dave and Todd, I thought I saw, yeah, Todd would have a pretty good idea on who that would be. So I'm making that formal thing. It's been a delight. I was trying to remember how long I've been on this advisory counselor board, and I'm going to say it's got to be way north of 20 years, probably 25 plus. So I go back to the Todd Bingham's dad days and Dave Davis's predecessor plus days, and even Jeff's I'm an old bugger. I've decided I'm an old bugger, and so it's time to turn the page. And it's been a blast. Had a lot of fun, and I think we've done some pretty cool things. And there's not a department in the country, and I'm not blowing sunshine here, that's better than you guys. You are good at what you do. You've been getting awards for many, many, many of those 25 years. Bill, a lot of those came on your watch, and you've just kept the thing going. So this is it's been an honor to serve, and I'll miss you guys.
Oh, thank you.
We'll miss you.
Yeah. Congrats.
Yeah, crazy, huh?
Cheers, Rich.
Yeah.
Yep, we're going to miss you, buddy.
Well, I'll tell you, it has been a blast. You know, it's hard to believe. I'm a slow learner. Dave has always told me I'm a slow learner, but I've been here at AGC. It'll be 43 years, 41 in the driver's seat. And when I started so many years ago, I thought this would be a great stepping stone. I'm going to meet some cool people and do some cool things. And holy cow, here it is 43 years later, I'm still trying to figure out how to unlock the front door. Anyway, it's been a blast.
We will miss you, Rich. One of my best memories of Rich is years ago we had an incident out in the South County Employment Center parking lot. Police had to be called. It was a domestic violence situation that got really ugly really quick. And that afternoon, I went out to, you know, see what we could do, and Rich was there. And he just wanted to check in with us and check in with the staff, and he was concerned, and I thought, man, that's pretty cool. Because that's, you know, public-facing building, a lot of insecurity with staff about security and what's going to happen. But anyway, Rich, that's been many, many years ago, and I will remember that. I appreciate your thoughtfulness on that day.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, it's been a blast, and it'll be fun to have one more meeting, and then technically, I don't know whether I'll call in or whether we'll say hello in December or whether we'll ride off into the sunset. Are you guys can coach me on that?
Yeah. Well, we're doing both. We're doing in-person and remote, so feel free to come in person, and maybe we can get Bill to drive up and take you for a ride on his motorcycle.
Sounds like a blast.
Well, thanks for everybody joining today. I am filling in for Justin, who he's off. If you've seen the movie Napoleon, he's off playing patty cake with his friend Pedro. So we really don't know where Justin is, but anyway, he asked me to fill in. So you should know me. I've been on the call not as long as Rich, but I've been participating for quite a while. I'm the chief of contributions, and Bill brought me out of appeals many years ago, Bill. 11 years, actually, this month. 11 years ago this month.
Yeah. Rescued you from appeals.
Yeah. You rescued me from the dark side, as they call it. So. Anyway, thanks, you guys, for being here. We do have some new members that are going to be joining the council. I'm not sure if we're ready to announce that today, but we're working on that. And then Rich, yeah, if you have a recommendation, go ahead and submit that, and we'll run that through the process as well. Want to do a quick shout-out. We'll introduce Mark Nold in a minute, but he's our guest speaker today. He's the DWS chief economist, and looking forward to hearing from him. He's the guy that you'll see in the news all the time, and we love when he comes and shares his insights. So we'll hear from Mark in just a minute. Let's take care of some business, though. Mary, have we got a quorum?
Yes.
Oh, awesome. I guess the first order of business is the minutes for our last meeting, May 12, 2022, were sent out, and we need approval for those minutes to become part of our official record. So,
motion to approve.
There we go. And a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Yep, there we go.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. I think we'll jump right to Mark. This is probably the most important and most interesting part of the meeting, that's for sure. So, Mark has graciously agreed to share some insights with us. I recently read an article that was published after an interview with Mark, and looking forward to what he's got to share with us. So, Mark, we'll turn the time over to you. So we can see your screen, but we can't hear you quite yet.
Mark, you're on mute.
Okay, now you can see and hear, right?
We lost your screen. So, yeah, if you want to present, we can hear you now, though.
Let's see if we can get it all together here. This is my first rodeo. I've never done this before. How about now?
There we go.
Yep, looks good.
Okay. That ate up my 1 minute of my 10 minutes. Okay. There's a lot of interesting things going on in the economy right now. It doesn't seem to be performing the way it has in the past. And some crazy things. Been really doing a lot of presentations lately, and it's largely around what's going on with the labor shortages. Because it was hard to get workers before the pandemic, but pandemic put a lot of people out of work and shook things up, and then we can't get labor. Where is it? What's going on here? To be honest with you, the answer to the question has really been 60 to 70 years in the making. We're really coming up against a demographic phenomenon that we've never seen before. And so to do that, I want to take you on a long journey to get us to the point where this will all make sense as to what exactly is going on. Before you is what we call population age trees. Utah is on the left. The United States is on the right. Understand that Utah is just a very small blip inside of the one to the right, but it does have its own structure. You put the boys on the left and the girls on the right, and you build five-year age increments from the bottom upward. And what you see here is 1960. In the blue is the baby boom generation. What we will call in the yellow is, let's call that the economy. That is the people who work or the potential to work. These are the people who have money in their wallets. These are the ones who make the economy the size that it is, and I'm representing that back of the envelope wise with those vertical yellow lines. But you can see as time goes on, to bring those blue people into the equation, you're going to have to get the economy to expand out to the vertical blue lines. In 1960, at the United States level, 31% of all the population was 0 to 14 years old. 65 and older was only 9% of the population. So you start moving forward, and you can see that now the entire baby boom generation is being represented for 5-year windows here of people. And you can see that part of it is already starting to make its way into the labor force. By 1980, you can see they're moving farther along, but now what is happening is that the big contrast is what I call it. You can see over on the left-hand side what is happening in terms of the baby boom generation reproducing itself and then some. The big story is what's not happening over on the right-hand side of the equation. The boomers are now coming into the economy almost fully, trying to get in. Unemployment is very high because the economy can't get big enough, fast enough for all these workers. But as time goes on, they get their educations, they start to move up the food chain, the economic food chain, so to speak. They're getting into their careers and their educations are being finished. Again, you can see over on the left-hand side that there is more young people being born over in Utah than at the United States level. By the time you get to the year 2000, the boomers have really moved into this thing and are pushing that economy out to a size that largely equals who they are. And you can see over in Utah that not only are the boomers having children, but now you're starting to see their grandchildren show up. And so by the time you get to the year 2010, you've really made a point here where the baby boom generation has largely done its run through the economy to a large degree. They're just about ready to start moving out. You can see that there isn't enough workers, though, behind them to fill the void that they're just about ready to eventually place upon the economy. On the other hand, you look at Utah, and we're always seem to be stretching the economy bigger and bigger year after year to try and bring in more of these workers, to bring in the young labor coming up and in. You can make an argument for every boomer who retires in Utah, there's two workers, young workers, who could come in and take their place. At the United States level, you're lucky to see one-to-one. And so by the time you get to 2020, you've run the course. The economy has gone from those inner vertical lines to the outer vertical lines. The baby boom generation, like Bill, is working its way already out into retirement. And instead of almost a 4-to-1 ratio of young to old, it's now almost 1-to-1 in terms of what's going on in this case. COVID stirred all of this up. This was a very powerful dynamic that was occurring. It was slowly happening year after year. It was right there under the surface. It would have emerged anyway, but some of these big disruptions have a way of taking these underlying forces and forcing them rapidly to the surface. Recent Census Bureau articles about all of this, this one strikes me very hard. The U.S. population basically had no growth in 2021. That's the slowest rate since the founding of the nation. And at the same time, international migration is at its lowest levels of decades. So what visually it looks like this. This is from 1900 to 2021. It's the annual percentage change in the U.S. population. Now, again, this is going to be everything from 0 to 100 years old, or however long the oldest person is. The labor force is anybody 16 and older. So the factors that are happening here will take a little bit longer to be the same story at the labor force level, but it's working towards that. So we're working our way to no growth whatsoever in the United States population. Never happened before. Here's another way of looking at it. The black line is that same visualization, only from 2001 forward. The dotted blue is the amount of births. The dotted orange is the amount of deaths. And you can see we're just about getting to the point where we have more deaths than we do births in this country. This is the effect of COVID, or when COVID hit. But I'll make the argument that that line had already turned even before COVID. And this is not a COVID uptick that's going on here. This is the beginning of that baby boom movement through the economy starting to show itself in volume in terms of deaths moving forward. At the same time, here is international in-migration. You can see that it has fallen rapidly since 2016 going forward. We have largely 900,000, almost a million less in-migration now than for a year than we did in 2016. So when you're right at the point where you're running out of internal people, and if you're going to hold your population or get bigger, you need to actually have more come in from the outside, it's turned downward instead. And a lot of this is driven by public policies. But again, like I said, this has been happening for a while in various places much quicker than elsewhere. This is looking at the percentage change between the 2010 census and the 2020 census at a county level. If you are orange, you have lost population between 2010 and 2020. So you can see how certain states in the West still has, you know, usually leads out in job growth and so on, but you can see a lot of the other parts of the country have their economic setbacks. It's really how it would translate. So here we are again at the 2020 situation, and we're about to have, again, something that's never
happened in this country's history before, and it's this large cohort of people aging out of the labor force without an equal or larger number coming in or backfilling in them in behind them. Now, the baby boom generation will, when they retire, will stop being producers in the economy. They will stop helping the making of goods and services, but they will still remain consumers. So you have, I still want things, but I'm not going to help you make them. And again, there isn't enough coming in behind. So this is some of the activity that you see that is producing inflation. Because after all, if you're going to have a high level of consumption, but you're taking away production to support it, you could also see how you could actually have two quarters of declining gross domestic product without having job losses, because you just don't have enough producers in the economy to keep up with the consumption that's being asked for. This is not something that's happened in the past. When we have these negative GDP numbers, it usually means because consumption is pulled back and the jobs are being let go to a certain degree to go match that less consumption. We still have the strong consumption. This is different. We don't have the producers. We don't have the workers. We don't have the labor. It's why we have this powerful labor shortage. This will be the story going forward in this country. It can have its, actually recessions will probably be things that bring a little bit of respite from it or easing from it. But when you go back to quote unquote normal economies, you will go right back to labor shortages and labor issues. Unless there is large policy changes that would bring labor in from the outside, because the only places you can get labor going forward is one of two things. Age it, bring it in from here, and that story's already, that stone's already been inscribed. So the only other place you can get labor is to bring it in, so to speak, from the sides, to bring it in from the outside. And so there's six plausible condign macro solutions. You can incentivize or pressure the baby boomers to remain in the labor force. You could force Bill to come back to work. But it's a very band-aid solution because, after all, baby boomers will eventually insist that they are going to retire, and then they will eventually insist that they're going to die also. So, again, it's only a band-aid solution if such were to be put in place. All right, why don't we just bring the products in from other countries if we want to consume more than we can produce? That's plausible. It's called imports, but COVID showed how that can get messed up when, if you're going to have things like health crises or geopolitical crises, it makes you vulnerable. Another solution is, well, why don't we just bring their labor here then and build the stuff inside this country? Viable solution, the in-migration I was speaking of, but currently the public policies are not supporting that. We can offset the departing labor with automation or artificial intelligence or some robotic form of production. A very viable solution. You would find that would help the manufacturing sector probably more than any others out there. But do remember this. Automation doesn't buy houses. Automation doesn't buy groceries. It doesn't buy health care. It doesn't buy cars. It doesn't buy education. It helps to produce things, but it does not increase the production or the demand for consumption. So, for example, we have all these houses in the country. We have a bit of a housing shortage. The boomers have spread this economy so big, they build second houses. What happens in 20 years when that large cohort is largely gone? All of a sudden, you're going to be speaking about housing gluts because there isn't enough people behind that whole situation to come in and buy those houses. The only place you can get buyers really to backfill that would be to bring in migration. You can incentivize births in the country. It would take probably 20 years before it would impact the labor force, but it is a solution. And then the other thing is just accept it all. Just let the economy naturally shrink. I'm going to make the argument that that's really what's kind of going on here. This is state-by-state employment changes from right before COVID till May of 2022. handful of states led out by Utah have more jobs now than they did before the pandemic. Many of these states do not. This has changed a little bit. We actually are at a point where the amount of jobs across this whole spectrum, the United States average, has finally got back to a zero-sum loss from the pandemic. But we've had some population growth and everything since then, so we're still, you know, basically per capita running a deficit. Over here, these red arrows, these are states where their 55 and older portion of the labor force is nearly 1.5 to 2 times or more greater than their 15 to 24 year old segment of the labor force. So in other words, they nearly have 2 to 1 times as many older workers than they do younger workers, and I think that is very telling in terms of this contraction here. One thing the pandemic did do, it seems to have expedited some retirements. There were people in the 55 and older segmentation who probably retired before they were planning to do that, maybe not under duress. A lot of them did it because the situation just turned out to be favorable that they could do such a thing. So, final slide. Here's what I see in terms of what is happening across this story I just told and why it is not hitting us as an economic setback, especially with high inflation, a couple of quarters of negative GDP. If we do get the economy to slow down, well, let me say it this way. The economy seems to be structured this way right now. And these are not in scale. I'm just showing these to for demonstration purposes only. The existing job count goes much longer off to the left and off the screen. And this is the economy. This is existing jobs. Particularly in Utah, we add new jobs every year. And these are new jobs that get filled. And we call this growth. I don't know how to powerfully measure this, but it does seem to be with a lot of the data that there is more job postings out there than are getting filled. And I call these the wannabe jobs. They're the growth potential. They're the unfilled jobs. This is where the economy is asking for that consumption, asking for the production and the amount of labor to equal the consumption. It's this thing, this combination here. We're only able to fill it to a certain point. If you get economic slowdowns, if you get something that looks like a recession, which usually turns into job contractions, there is a lot of cushion here to eat into the non-existent jobs before you start hitting the real jobs, before you start actually losing jobs. There are new terms I'm hearing. There was jobless recoveries. That's an old term. Flip that on its head, it would be no job loss recessions, something along that line. And that would be because really you have this cushion to just stop posting all your empty jobs and they go away before real jobs start to go away. That's my story. I'll take any questions, comments, anything at this point in time. So, how does it translate into UI? Well, you know, in the past, when you have economic setbacks and so on, oftentimes they instantly start feeling pressure on UI systems and you'll get increases in claims data and so on. The data I've seen have shown me zero hints of that happening right now. But I guess I'm saying that what going forward would usually be a normal or recessions and how they looked and acted in the past may not be the same as how recessions will look and act out into the future going forward.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes.
Any questions?
Hey, Mark, that was a great presentation, and what I took from the whole thing is that it is Bill and Rich's fault.
Yes, and hopefully mine soon.
Okay, now for that. just for the record, okay, doesn't have to be put in the minutes, I worked for NASWA full time after I left DWS.
Okay.
I still do consulting, and I'm also the president of one of the largest HOAs in Southern Utah. So I'm not at the golf course all day.
Well, I'm not going to follow that lead. That's for darn sure. I am going to be at the golf course or on a boat somewhere.
Yeah, but it sounds like Bill's employment doesn't show up in the UI wage records either.
Independent contractor.
Yeah.
Seems like there was something about a wine tasting club in there as well, Bill, if I remember.
Volunteer.
Yeah, Mark, great information. We appreciate your insight and your expertise on this. Lots of years of experience to draw from, so thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome. Enjoy the rest of your meeting.
Thanks, Mark. All right, folks, if you will refer to the email that Mary sent out, in that email you will see several attachments. And because we're meeting virtually and some folks in person, we'll just go through those attachments in the order that they were attached. So if that makes sense. I've asked Patrick to actually present for me. Last time I tried this, I had a Mark Knoll moment, messed everything up for a bit. So I trust Patrick a lot more than I trust myself. So Patrick, let's start with the trust fund balance projections. Patrick will display that for us. There we go.
Is that flashing weird on your screen?
Yeah, that's exciting.
Okay, cool. Let's try that again.
Is that a new feature you've implemented there, Patrick?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was the feature that we forgot to give people a warning about that might cause seizures in the meeting. We forgot to issue that warning. This results. There we go.
There we go. So for those that have attended the meeting for a bit and seen this document before, what we're looking at is the minimum and the maximum and then the actual trust fund. So we are required by law to maintain a minimum trust fund balance and a maximum. So the maximum is represented by that blue line on top. Minimum is represented by the blue line on the bottom. The actual trust fund balance is the dotted red line. So we're required to have, at minimum, 18 months of benefits in the trust fund, meaning we could pay 18 months of benefits without any additional income, any additional taxes being collected. That's based on a 25-year look back, identifying the highest periods of recession in that period of time. The high is 24 months. So basically, a healthy trust fund, by our definition, is 18 to 24 months of benefits in the piggy bank. And you can see the impact that the pandemic had on the trust fund. The very far right is our projection of how that trust fund is going to react in the future. You can see now that we are building the trust fund reserves back to get it back within the minimum and the maximum. All right. Any questions on that?
Mike, it doesn't go beyond 2023. Do you expect it to be within the minimum in 2024?
We're projecting. Yes, we're pretty close to that. I was waiting to see if Mark would fall for the economist's debate of when's the next recession going to hit. He wisely
said that.
So,
true.
Yeah, anybody's guess is as good as ours, but we're in a very good spot. We're recovering quickly, but not too quickly. Bill, you remember before after the Great Recession, the increase in taxes and what a burden that was for employers. Helped us get back within the blue lines. This year, it's a little bit slower. We'll talk about why that is in just a minute. But, yeah, great question. All right, anything else on that one? We'll flip now to the trust fund reserve factor and social cost calculation. And I've asked Patrick, this is a lot of information here. So the first column on the left gives you your dates. The next column over gives us what we call modernization and special administration. It's just some extra funding that we got for special projects that we're not spending on the payment of benefits. We then have, you can see in there the total balance, the minimum and adequate we talked about, the rate year, the tax rate year, reserve factor, social cost. So I asked Patrick, what three pieces of information would you want us to know from this chart? Patrick, what would you say? What three things?
So what I was going to do is I was just going to split the chart sort of up into three areas and just give a brief explanation of each of those areas. And Mike had sort of started to talk about a couple of them, so I hope I'm not too redundant, and I'll try to keep it brief. But so the first area right here is these first three columns that Mike was just talking about. And that's just giving you guys an idea of the balance of our trust fund. And that's the dollars that we have available to pay benefits to claimants. And the total balance here is what is available as of the 30th of June in each of those years. And then along the way, we start to split up these funds between the modernization and the UI funds. And that's just what Mike was talking about. And I just think it's important to understand that we've got some funds that land in our trust fund that we've been able to, that have been authorized to spend not on benefits for either administration or modernization of our different UI computer systems. And so when we're looking at the minimum and max adequate, we take out those modernization funds because those aren't available to pay benefits to employee or to claimants. So the next bit is that min and max adequate, and Mike did a good job of explaining what those are, and it's just sort of our best guess, right? Of we have a formula that helps us come up with a projection of looking at the past and saying, you know, how much benefits have we been paying out compared to our wages. We create this ratio, and then we apply, you know, that ratio to this year's wages, and then we say we get it to either to we apply it to 1.5 years or 2 years to get our minimum and our maximum, so then we can compare that. And then the last group is just looking here sort of at the taxes that and what effect those will have. And so they start over this rate year, right, that it is what we will calculate 2023's taxes based off of 2022's information. And so you can see that's why it's lined up there. It can get a little bit confusing why we have a 2023 here and a 2022 over here, but that's because we're using 2022's information to calculate the tax rates for 2023. But this reserve factor, what it is it's a way for us to pump the brakes or push on the gas pedal for our collection efforts, for the tax revenue. And it only goes against those who are, who have experience ratings, meaning that they've had employees who have claimed benefits before and have been receiving benefits from the trust fund. And if they are an experienced, a UI experienced employer, then they have to pay. If we're below the minimum, essentially, and we have a greater than one reserve factor, then we sort of goose our taxes that we're collecting from just to get back within that minimum range. And if we go above, which we have, we slow them down and we pump the brakes. And then the the social costs, right, those are, that's just a way for us to try to recoup costs against the system that there are no longer employers, or we did not bill employers for. And so, you know, something, we had a lot of social costs that came about because of the pandemic, and we, you know, we decided not to to bill employers for, or charge employers for those costs, because, you know, we kind of chalked that up to the pandemic, said it wasn't their fault that all these employees had to stop working. And so we have a way to, a method to collect benefits that were paid out that were saying nobody's fault, essentially, or somebody's fault that can't pay anymore. And so, and then the last is just our contributions collected for that calendar year. So I, you know, I think, and you can kind of see how they all sort of interrelate. The, you know, looking, you can now sort of look and say, well, is this UI funds? Are they falling in between the min and max? If it's below the min, then I would expect to see a reserve factor of greater than one. If it's above, then I'd expect to see a reserve factor of less than one. And if it's in between, then that's when we have the reserve factors of one. So I think that was sort of what I wanted to talk about.
Perfect. Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah.
Patrick, if you could zoom in so we could see that green column reserve factor. This is a 25-year look back, so this is, you know, a big chunk of Bill's career, for example. As Patrick said, if the reserve factor is 1, that means our trust fund is healthy. If it's above 1, that means we're trying to pull in more taxes. If it's below 1, we're trying to slow the flow and not collect as many taxes. So if we go all the way back to, say, 2015, you see 1.95, 1.1.1.1, all the way to 2020. That's a pretty good run where the trust fund was, using the Goldilocks principle, just right. Okay. If you pop up to 2011, those are the painful years that we remember, when it was 1.45. So we were trying to accelerate the collection of taxes to quickly replenish the fund. We've learned some lessons. We've heard it said before in this meeting that we have to trust the formula that Patrick's explained that calculates this. We have to pay a little bit higher taxes right now to prepare for the next recession. And then as soon as we are prepared, we've met that minimum. Then we slow the flow down so that we cannot exceed the maximum. So there's, on one sheet, a 25-year look back at Utah's success in managing a trust fund to keep it healthy. So props to our employer community, legislative community that's helped with that, and then, of course, just applying that on the ground here in unemployment insurance. So, great. Thanks, Patrick. Any questions for Patrick on this particular chart? A lot of data there to absorb. All right, Patrick, let's check, flip to the contributions versus benefits paid. This is our double helix DNA. So the vertical represents, of course, trust fund balance. So the vertical green is your trust fund balance. On the left, we start at 2000. On the right, we project it out to 2023. Blue represents unemployment benefits paid, and then red, the taxes collected. So if you start on the left, you see where the blue line goes up. More benefits are being paid in response to a recession. The trust fund balance has a delayed response. It does decrease. But as it decreases, then we see the taxes collected increase. And then as the trust fund balance reaches the healthy state again, taxes decrease. And we go through a recession, taxes go up and they go down. So this is nothing new. This is the last 20 years that we have all experienced as consumers in the economy. Okay. Any questions on that? So, Bill, I guess to answer your question, our projections are that we should be back to healthy for rate year 2025, unless things change. Some things did change. Patrick, do you want to pull up that PDF that I sent you? This is super simple. This is not in your handouts. We'll probably just end with this. So, as you all remember, Representative Lisenby and Senator McKay passed legislation, House Bill 2002, where they froze some of our factors. So, for Patrick, you want to zoom that in just a little bit so it's as large as you can. So, for 2022, our social costs were fixed at 0.003, and the reserve ratio was fixed at no more than 1.115. For next tax year, 2023 and 2024, social costs cannot exceed 0.004, reserve factor cannot exceed 1.2. Now, our calculations, our projections are saying we may not even hit that, so this may be a moot point, but legislation is in place to make sure that we don't rebuild the trust fund balance so quickly as to overwhelm or overburden the employer population. Hey, I think that's about it. That's all I've got to share with y'all. So let's open it up. Any questions or comments for me or Patrick? Anything, any discussion we need to have on this?
I just want to say thank you. You guys have done an excellent job. The formula is working, and you project that information to the legislators and legislative fiscal analysts, and I think Utah's in much better shape than every other state in the nation, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, Mike, are you anticipating any types of legislative asks this go around? I know it feels like we're a long way from the legislative session starting, but you know, the fun is going to be upon us before we can, shake a stick at some. So is there anything that the department is anticipating by way of an ask? And it's always, I think many of us on the committee that spend time up on the Hill are generally happy to help out. Yeah. Unless you're asking for really goofy things.
Well, thanks to the foresight that Kevin Burr had with this legislation and responding to House Bill 2002, we're hoping that the legislative eye is elsewhere for tax year 2023 and 2024. So we're hoping that the fact that they put these stops in place will kind of let them focus on something else. As far as asks related to unemployment insurance, I'm not aware of anything. Justin was able to join us, so Justin, speak up if you've heard of anything. But so far, so good on the unemployment insurance front. I know Melissa's here. We've got some different programs that PWS has been asked to manage, including the recent child care worker. Melissa, are we calling that a bonus or a credit? But
I believe they're calling it a bonus.
Yeah, so the child care worker bonus, our agency's administering, but not our unemployment division. There's also been some other larger programs legislatively that have come down but have not yet affected unemployment insurance. So, Dave, I guess we'll just be on standby. It's great to be in the bullpen instead of on the pitcher's mound sometimes, so we like that. But we'll let you know if that changes. All right. Anything else? We can't have a complete meeting unless we get a little badgering between Todd and Dave. So Dave threw some out there at the beginning.
Just motion to shut Dave up for the future three meetings.
Hey, Bingham, you'll never get a second on that one.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, Rich might say that on his way out. He might throw me a bone.
You're both friends. I want to keep it that way.
I'll second that, Todd.
No, I just wanted to echo what Candace said. Thanks for what you guys do. And, as she alluded to, as I sit with my colleagues just a couple weeks ago across the country and listen to what some of our states across the country are dealing with. You know, Illinois, for example, is just an absolute disaster on uninsured employers. And all. So thanks for the foresight, not only of you guys, but our legislature, and the great job you do in managing it. So it's a big deal for our employers. So thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Todd. Well, a quick shout out to Leanne Madsen, our benefits chief. She's on the call with us, and she and her team of claims takers and adjudicators have done a tremendous amount of work these last 2.5 years. So great job to the benefits staff. Okay, next item on the agenda, our next meeting, we've got December 8th, 2022, same time, 2:30. Again, we'll make a space available here for folks that would like to come in person. Virtual will still be an option. So, Rich, if you want to come in for your farewell tour, we'd be happy to have you here and host you for that.
Sounds great.
Awesome.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Rich, make sure that you let us know if you're going to be in person because, you know, I might go buy a couple of zingers to pass around or something.
I'll have a t-shirt made. Rich's farewell tour. I'd like to do that. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
All right, any other discussion or business before I ask for a motion to adjourn? We're good. All right, so how about a motion to adjourn the meeting then?
So moved.
All right. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, you guys. We should have been here, guys. Support. Yep. Have a great day.
Thanks, everyone. Nice to see you.
Thanks again.
Bye. Thanks.